Thank you very much, Colin. We're really delighted to have the opportunity of being here, seeing such an excellent turnout here today. And I'd like to start by not only thanking you for giving up your valuable time, but also as we've gone around as part of this consultation, we've experienced some remarkable projects that are making a massive difference to people's lives. Lots of extraordinary people doing extraordinary things, often in very, very challenging circumstances, and making the change for communities from a grassroots level. So I'd like to begin by thanking you and paying tribute to all of you who are making a real difference, as I say, in some quite challenging circumstances in many parts of Northern Ireland. I'd like to start by also thanking Deirdre and Colin, who are doing a remarkable job in leading this commission. I think sometimes people can be quite cynical about consultations, but they have actually, as you know, been visiting lots of projects, meeting people face-to-face. It's not just an exchange of information or a paper exercise. It's a real live engagement and consultation. And I want to share a couple of secrets with you about Deirdre and Colin. First of all, Deirdre, I don't think this will come as a major shock to those of you who know her. I first met Deirdre via a selfie. That was my first ever meeting in Oxford. This is a modern way of, I nearly said speed dating, but people might get the wrong idea. And Colin, of course, who is one of the most successful business people and entrepreneurs in Northern Ireland, has started to receive lots of communication that begins with the words, "Dear Comrade." And I think what's even more interesting is Colin quite likes being called "Dear Comrade." I'd also like to thank Glenn Roberts, who I think is here from Deloitte, for the support that they've given the Commission, for Fergal, who has been on secondment to the Commission and making the work, the administrative work, possible, and also thank Jess and Heather, who work for me, who, in addition to all of their other responsibilities, have been supporting the work of the Commission too. And, of course, I'm really delighted that Ed is here this morning. Now, of course, I can say lots of things normally in Northern Ireland, and nobody ever knows what I'm saying. So when the boss is actually in the room, you have to be a little bit more careful. And what I wanted to say was this. In an age of scepticism and cynicism about politics and politicians, I think most people want to know two things about leaders. The first thing is, do they get it in terms of the kind of lives that most people live? Or are they in some ivory tower? Do they get it? And secondly, do they have a plan to give me and my family realistic hope of a better future? Now, in Ed's speech, he will deal with the second point, the latter point. I want to deal with the first point about getting it. Over the last 4.5 years, when I think about all of the big issues that people say to me matters to them in their everyday lives, Ed has been the first politician to get it. And I'll give you some examples. The squeezed middle. The first politician to talk about the squeezed middle. What's the squeezed middle? The fact that more and more people are working harder and harder, neither rich or poor, yet their pay's not getting any better, their household bills are going up, and people feel increasingly squeezed. He was the first senior politician to talk about it. The second issue, responsible capitalism. What does that mean? Well, some people, in the aftermath of the global financial crisis, seem to want us to carry on as though nothing happened. What Ez said, quite rightly, was there is actually no choice. They are not competing options, profit and ethics. Of course business is about profit. Profit is not a dirty word. Without wealth creation, we cannot do the kind of social justice things we want in our society. But we should never be asked, in the context of business success, to choose between profit and ethics. And I think most business people realise that in terms of the way they treat their staff and the way they treat their consumers. And the third big picture issue is this fear. And looking around the room, I think there's many people who share it. We always thought the deal was that you get up every morning because you want your kids and your grandkids to have better life chances than you. And that deal has never been more at risk than it is today. We've got some remarkable young people in this room, and I know they're going to be the brightest and the best. But let's be honest, their start in life is tougher than our start in life was in many ways. And Ed was the first politician to draw attention to that. Two final issues. Powerful vested interests when they act against the public interest. When News International were hacking people's phones on an industrial scale and intruding into people's lives. When energy companies were ripping people off. Ed said enough is enough. We have to stand up to powerful vested interests when they're acting against the public interest. And by the way, when you do that, you attract a lot of criticism. because the powerful don't like to be challenged. That is a fact. But our job is always to speak out in the public interest. And the final issue I'd raise as an example is the question of mental health. You know, it's not a sexy issue, but how many families are affected by the silent menace of mental health? It's something that people don't like to talk about. Much happier going to the doctor when you have a physical condition, talking to your friends, your workmates. But mental health affects far many people in our society than we ever acknowledge, and particularly in this society. You all know that one of the consequences of the Troubles that is not spoken about enough is the intergenerational trauma and mental health that is left in this society as a consequence of that. And the fact that Ed has chosen as a political leader to talk about the issue, as well as actually come up with some solutions, is incredibly important. So I think part of the reason that he will be a great Prime Minister is because he gets the issues which really do matter to people. I just want to say a little bit about the Commission itself. When I've spoken to you in the past, I've told you a little bit about my own story. My life changed at the age of 14 when I started doing voluntary work with people with learning disabilities. When I made a decision at 17 that my parents didn't like to leave education and set up a charity working with people with learning disabilities and people with mental health problems. Those were my formative experiences and made me passionate about inequality. What did I learn? Well, the first thing I learned was that people, irrespective of their label, have massive potential and are too often denied the opportunity to fulfill that potential. And I also learned, in the context of people with special needs, the horrible fight that parents often have to get basic, decent responses from public services. They used to say to me, why is it we have to fight the system all the time rather than have a system on our side? Why is that relevant to the work of the Commission? Why are those two issues relevant? Well, first of all, inequality is not just about income. It's about power. And the way that the state relates to people should be a much more partnership relationship. For example, should treat parents as senior partners in decisions that are made about young people with disabilities, not as service users. The other issues that it brings to my mind are labels. That dreadful term, NEETs. Are people here familiar with what NEETs means? It's young people not in education, employment, or training. We call and label young people in that way. What does that say about them and how we feel about them and how we value them? So language actually and labels do matter in terms of if you define people in that way, you often treat them in a way that is not as respectful as we would want. And the other issue that it brings to mind is the tyranny, and Colin and Deirdre, all of the work that they're doing, the tyranny of silos that get in the way of people getting the services that they need. Departmentalitis, turf warfare, different agencies. Some people having, you know, 6 or 7 professionals from different agencies visiting their home almost on a weekly basis, and yet people not getting a joined up, integrated service. All of those things are coming out of this process. So I also want to play back very quickly the themes that consistently Deirdre, Colin and myself are hearing when we talk to people. If you like, these are emerging themes in terms of what people say. And I always used to say when I was a minister, I used to go around the country talking to people about the different things I was responsible for. And wherever I went in the country, people would tell me exactly the same thing about where the system was going wrong. And I'd arrive back in the office and I'd say to the civil servants, you know, either all of these people are telling us the truth or there's a massive conspiracy against the government. And it often took the system a long, long time to actually respond to deal with some of those obstacles. So what are some of the issues that people keep playing back to us time and time again? Well, first of all, the importance of community planning, of being able to make decisions about communities bottom up, not have them imposed top down, and the fact that community planning hasn't quite been implemented yet. The fact that there are lots of programmes and projects, but people struggle to have long-term stability and certainty in terms of the change that they want to make. That early intervention and prevention is at risk like never before because of cuts. So what happens when you have too fast, too deep cuts is that you end up only providing statutory type services, and early intervention and prevention goes, which, by the way, is not only wrong socially, it's balmy economics as well. We've also, I think, come across many projects which have demonstrated the importance of personalisation. You know, a person can have lots of obstacles and barriers in terms of the things that are stopping them progressing in their life. It might be about their learning, it might be about their relationships, it might be about their health. So the important thing is increasingly to try and offer people a personalised service which looks at the individual as a whole. I think we talk about person-centred healthcare and tries to deal with all of those issues. People talk to us a lot about school standards. You know, at its best, the Northern Ireland education system is brilliant, but it still lets down far too many young people, nearly 50% leaving without basic qualifications. There needs to be a much closer synergy, people tell us, between what happens in the world of education and what's needed in terms of skills and what's needed in terms of the labour market and the future. There is a need for a lot more high-skilled, high-tech jobs in Northern Ireland. At the moment, too many of the jobs are low-paid and too many people are underemployed. And then there are Northern Ireland-specific issues, as I said earlier, mental health, but also the challenges facing ex-prisoners, etc. So those are some of the issues that people are starting to play back. There are many, many other issues that people will have in this room that they want to raise. Now, I want to end by saying this. Many of the solutions, of course, are devolved, and therefore we have to respect that, and it would be what an incoming Labour government could do in partnership with the Northern Ireland Executive. But also, many of those type solutions are organisational and systemic. And I want to end with a story to try and explain why some of these things are not just about organisations and systems. When I was a minister, I went to a place, one of the poorest places in England, in the northeast of England, a place called Easington. It's probably got all of the most, in terms of social deprivation, almost the worst indicators in the country. And I met the head of lifelong learning there. And he said, you know, he says to me, what people tell me here is all of the young people in Easington have really low aspirations. The reason we can't make any progress here is because they all have low aspirations. And he said, I didn't really feel comfortable with this notion. So I started to go around all the schools and speak to the 13-year-olds, the 14-year-olds, and the 15-year-olds. And he said every single young person I spoke to wanted to be a doctor, a nurse, a teacher, a lawyer. Not many wanted to be a politician. All of those young people had massive aspirations. The problem was the expectations. The expectations of the community, of the families, that became themselves, which became almost a self-fulfilling prophecy. That somehow people who are born in particular neighbourhoods of particular backgrounds do not have the right to fulfil their potential and have the same opportunities. So when we think about this piece of work at the end of the process, by all means, let's talk about organisations and systems, but let's also remember that question of expectations. And I think our ambition should be, all our ambition in terms of the values that my party, our party has, is this, that every young person not in education, employment or training, should be able to fulfil their potential, whatever that potential is. And every young entrepreneur should be given the support to fulfil their potential as well. A healthy, vibrant society needs the talent of all of the people being utilised to maximum effect. So thank you so much, everybody, for the positive and constructive way you're engaging with our commission. I hope this is responding to a need in Northern Ireland in terms of some of the issues that are maybe we need to address more. But we are very serious that the recommendations we come up with at the beginning of March, the Deirdre and Collins Commission come up with, we want to take those seriously in terms of informing an incoming Labour government's programme. We look forward to engaging you with you further in the weeks ahead. Thank you very much.